Christine Massey, welcome back to Planet Waves FM. It's a pleasure as ever to have you.
Hi, Eric. Thank you so much for having me again.
So, Christine, I had the occasion to question Robert F. Kennedy Jr. at a Q&A session at a fundraiser in Greenwich, Connecticut on Sunday night, a little less than a week ago. And in developing my strategy for what to ask, knowing I could only get in one question, working with Bill Houston, I came up with he suggested that you were the hook. I wanted to ask about the existence of the virus, and he said, "Well, Christine Massey is your lead. She's your hook." Mm-hmm. And what I asked him, and I'll play the recording in a moment. So the scene is a room with about big conference room in a hotel, about 200 people. He's just given a 90-minute speech about how comfortable he is reading scientific studies and how he came around on the vaccine issue and how he realized that government entities and actors are corrupt people or woefully misinformed, which I don't think is any different than corrupt. Mm-hmm. They're in a position of knowledge. And so he's just given this long talk on him personally coming around on vaccines and how they admit that vaccines are harmful. That's why there's the liability exemption under the 1986 law. And this goes on for a while, and then finally Q&A opens up, and I got in the second question. And I asked about you, and it's a little hard to hear, so I just want to say, so people know what to listen for, about the 182, up till that day, it was 182 responses from various entities, government, state, institutions, and all, saying they can't produce a human sample.
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. But we don't need to use the technical term of isolated, purified, whatever. Human mm-hmm. sample.
Yep.
Actual human sample of the thing said to have killed 5 million people. Mm-hmm. Can't believe I'm even saying this. All right. Let's play my interchange with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the son of Senator Robert F. Kennedy, Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy, and the nephew of President John F. Kennedy.
Hi, Bobby. Thank you. Christine Massey in Toronto has amassed 182 responses under various Freedom of Information law requests from institutions, provincial, state, federal, national governments, which all say no one has a sample of SARS-CoV-2 taken from a human. Would you please comment on that?
Yeah, I really am not qualified to comment on it, but my inclination, if there are people who say that viruses don't exist, there is no virus, my inclination is that simply is not, that's not true. I can't argue it with you, and I can't, I actually, on our list, there's a number of people who make those kind of arguments. Other people on their list serve, and these are all very brilliant people, ridicule them and dismiss them and produce a lot of evidence. But I am kind of amused reading the exchanges. My inclination is that viruses do exist and they do make people sick. I could be wrong, it could all be a big hoax, but to me, it seems like viruses are real. So I should have just shut up from the beginning and say, I can't answer that question. I saw an exchange yesterday where somebody made exactly that statement, and then 10 people jumped on him with examples of where that's not true.
Okay.
So, the other thing is, I do know this. When you make freedom of information requests, the freedom of information laws do not require the government agency to do science or to answer questions, specific questions. What they do is they, the Freedom of Information laws make it obligatory for the government to give you existing documents. Oh, if you're telling the government, I want you to verify this, and they look at their documents and they say, there's nothing here to verify it, it doesn't mean it's not true. It means they got nothing. But listen, again, I am not a good person. I'm not a scientist. I don't pretend to be. I find those arguments interesting. And there's a guy in California who I deeply respect, Tom Cowling, who makes those arguments. And it's brilliant in the way he makes somebody he also is not taken seriously. I thought about other people, so I don't know. I can't answer the question.
Thank you.
It was a very interesting response, and it was not the answer to the question that I asked.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did, he commented on the Freedom of Information responses, but he didn't, it sounds to me as though he hasn't actually read any of them, because, at least the ones that I personally did, because I never asked for, like, I understand how freedom of information works, so I never asked an institution to do science, or what was the other thing that he said, to do science or to verify some, oh, or answer questions. I never did that. The requests were always for documents. I understand how it works. You ask for records that are in the possession, custody, or control of the institution in question, and... So it was, these were proper information requests, mm-hmm. and it was requests for any record of the virus having been purified or mm-hmm. someone having an actual sample of the virus mm-hmm. or of anyone that they know of, like any record written by anyone anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. So it was very comprehensive, and if anybody had this type of record, like surely to God we would have had it by now, because there's so many institutions now that are on record failing to provide even one example. Mm-hmm. So I got the impression he hasn't actually read them, or maybe he has read one or two here and there that were worded a little bit differently. There are some countries where you can ask a question too, so I don't know what he has seen and what he hasn't seen, but he's definitely not familiar with the, you know, this body of evidence that we have now.
I think he was completely clueless about the issue as well. I think he's perceiving it as being a kind of an abstract debate, the outcome of which doesn't really matter.
I don't know. I mean, it was a little difficult to hear what he's saying at the end. It would be nice to get some clarification from him. I don't know if that's possible or for someone.
No, it's not going to be possible. Let me tell you what, I can read from the transcript. Mm-hmm.
He mentions Tom Cowan, I believe. It sounds like he says Cowling, but
Cowling, yep.
Soon and he's talking about Tom Cowan.
Okay, so here's where his response does not answer my question. I said that 182 institutions deny having the scientific paper pointing to the existence of a human sample. There's hundreds of papers claiming isolation and purification, but they're all pertaining to in silico sequences. Mm-hmm. And then he says something, he says everything he says is surprising to me. He says that on our listserv, there's a number of people who make these kinds of arguments, and other people on the listserv, and they're all very brilliant people, ridicule them and dismiss them and have them produce a lot of evidence. So they produce the evidence, then they're ridiculed and dismissed.
Yeah, and they're not taken seriously. So
let's check that out first. And there's several more statements he makes. And he said he gave me 400 words. That's quite a lot of text. Brilliant people on both sides, but The ones making those kinds of claims are dismissed. Now, they're making claims about virus existence. We're talking here about governments producing a record, a scientific paper.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
This is a very different issue. This is not a theoretical discussion. Right. Initially, we're having a legal discussion.
Yeah. Are they able to, any of those institutions have basically admitted that they can't possibly prove the existence of the alleged virus, because to prove the existence, one of the initial step would be to purify it, and yet they don't have a sample of it. They don't know of anyone else having a sample of it. So mm-hmm. none of those institutions can back up their claims. And the reasons, you know, why these particular institutions were asked is because these are institutions that are telling people, you know, either laying down laws or enforcing laws, or, you know, universities conducting so-called science on the so-called virus. So these are all institutions that should have this information. They're passing themselves off as experts to the public and telling people what to do and what they, you know, what they should and shouldn't do. So these are the people, these are the ones that should have it. And they don't have it. And it includes many institutions that claim to have purified the virus.
FDA, CDC, Health Canada, National Health Service. But here's the thing. They're not producing the zoo paper. They're not producing the four major papers that supposedly prove the existence of the virus. They're not saying that because they know those papers don't meet the qualification that you're setting, which is a human sample.
Well, sometimes, just to clarify, so sometimes it depends on the institution, and sometimes it even depends on the particular man or woman that you're dealing with. Sometimes we do have institutions giving us records that they claim are responsive, but when you read the methodology, then you realize that they don't match the description of what I asked for. Sometimes I'll go back and point that out to them, you know, that this isn't actually what I asked for, and then sometimes they admit they don't have anything, or sometimes they just kind of leave it up in the air, you know, that they disagree. But, I mean, anyone can read the papers, and they can see that they don't match the description. And we really have clear evidence in Canada, because I have 48 institutions in Canada on record. And in Canada, at least with the legislation that I'm dealing with, because there's different ones in different provinces, but all the ones I've dealt with, they actually specify that if the institution doesn't have the requested record, they have to say so explicitly. Whereas a lot of other legislation, it doesn't require that. In Canada, you can put them on the spot and you can say, listen, that does not match what I asked for, and I need a response that's, you know, in compliance with the legislation. And I point out that section, and then for all of them, I have them admitting that they have no record.
Mm-hmm.
So that includes Health Canada, Public Health Agency of Canada, and we have five institutions that claimed to have been involved in isolating the alleged virus, and they all had to admit they don't have any records.
Right. So we're talking about the difference between an actual sample and a computer-generated model. This is very important for people to understand this.
Yep.
And the difference is all the difference in the world, because if you take a computer-generated model and you put that into the COVID test, and the COVID tests positive, the person's testing positive for computer code, not a sequenced actual virus.
Yes.
Okay, so now apart from this seeming technicality, which it's not, he talks about how people are ridiculed and dismissed having produced evidence. Now, I thought that was probably the most stunning thing that he said, was that he's aware of this controversy, but yet it is being settled by ridicule and dismissal, mm-hmm. essentially by mob rule.
Yeah, and that's especially strange coming from someone who for years has been speaking out about a very controversial issue. You know, all these years he hasn't been relying on popular opinion. If he was, he wouldn't have been doing what he was doing all these years.
That's
so
right.
This is why it's really disturbing, and I'm really glad that you questioned him and that you have this on record, because Children's Health Defense has become established as an organization. I mean, I followed their work for years. I used to always be sharing it on social media and like so many other people. And, you know, and they have, you know, a team of people and seem to really know what they're talking about. And so they're influencing a lot of people. And, you know, people have this perception that if anyone's going to get to the bottom, it'll be an organization like Children's Health Defense. And I'm not trying to accuse them of anything, you know, that they're doing this on purpose. I don't know what the issue is, why they're, you know, either afraid to address this issue head on, or they're just extremely naive. But I mean, you heard him saying he's aware of this debate.
That's right.
So I don't understand. This is a man who's on record for years saying he's very comfortable reading scientific studies. You know, this is what he's been doing all these years. He doesn't just rely on, well, what do other people tell him? So why he is not willing to just read the isolation papers himself and make his own conclusion. And the thing is, it's simple logic. And like at this point, thousands or maybe probably millions, I don't know, people around the world have looking for themselves and been able to see what's really going on. So why right. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. of all people would shy away, I don't know what the reason is, but hopefully he can be persuaded to you know, address this head on.
There's a lot of possible reasons. He would not take a stance on the mask issue either, even in the face of overwhelming evidence of masks being a complete sham, until William Houston produced one single Freedom of Information Law request from the New York State Health Department where they said they had no data, pro or con, effective or not, safe or not, on masks. And when confronted with that, he gave a very different answer to that. He said, I will read from the response that I preserved last year. In 2020, in response to one Freedom of Information Law request about masks from one institution, the New York State Health Department, Freedom of Information Laws. Oh, wait, what? Another one? Hold on. At the time, he told his Instagram followers, quote, it erodes popular faith in democracy when public officials insist that their arbitrary policies are science-based and yet cannot produce a single study to support their sweeping mandates. This letter illustrates the hazards of abandoning due process.
Yep, exactly. So now when we have 182 responses, and that's 182 institutions, and we have multiple responses. Like, there's no room for error here. We just received the 8th response from the CDC, 8 times they're on record being asked for this information, and every single time they fail. So, right. You know, it's very clear.
So you're in the department of proving a negative, right? That's very hard. And ultimately, you really can't prove a negative, and you should never be required to. In a sense, you're the margin of safety. The real, let's say, forefront of this is that all of the studies admit that they are using contrived viruses, in silico sequences, synthetic nucleotide technology. There's 5 different words for it. Mimicked human specimens, contrived viruses. I think I said that. And so they're outright admitting this in their papers. And I view your efforts as a kind of a safety net. Of saying, oh, and by the way, they all also say they don't have any of the real thing. Mm-hmm. And my role has been to say, to connect the two, to say you need the real thing to test for the real thing. If you don't have the real thing, then you're not testing for anything real.
Yes. Yeah, and the onus is on them to prove that there is a virus. You know, this is what... this is what they need to be challenged to do. Well, it's what they have been challenged to do, but they need to be challenged, you know, in court, and they need to be challenged by a lot of people, and people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Because, like you said, if you don't have an actual sample of the thing, you can't study. It's just a theoretical thing. You can't study it. You can't do any science with it. You can't do any controlled experiments with it. You can't draw any conclusions. It's only a theoretical construct. So clearly, if they were challenged in court, you know, unless it's an extremely corrupt court, and we have had some examples, unfortunately, of that, where the courts wouldn't actually review the evidence, but if someone can get into a court where they will actually review the evidence, it'll be very clear that there is no proof of this virus.
Yes. And one of the things that I was, without saying so, objecting to was the fact that the Defender, CHD's publication, has never acknowledged your existence, to my knowledge.
Yeah. And you know what? They did publish, going back maybe just like 3 years or so, I'm not sure when exactly, but it was one of my it was the same sort of freedom of information request, but it was in the context of water fluoridation. It was I had asked for studies. It was the Washington State Department of Health, and I had asked them for any studies showing that fluoride exposure during pregnancy is safe with respect to the IQ or ADHD symptoms of offspring. And they had no records, and they actually shared that on their website, mm-hmm. Children's Health Defense. So why they're not sharing and drawing attention to this other issue that's, you know, has just as much more impact on people.
Well, it's a much safer issue to talk about fluoridation. I think it's not controversial. During the Cold War, it had another overtone. You know, the commies are putting fluoride in the water to make us all stupid. And sometimes you wonder if that hasn't actually happened. I think that from a public standpoint, I think that this is considered a crackpot issue.
Well,
right. You're crazy. Yeah. You're crazy if you think there's not a virus, right? That's just this kind of default position.
Yeah.
I think it's something else, which I can't say. Yeah, but I've put the question to Mary Holland at CHD, but right. So I think that it's the kind of thing they're worried about offending people with their seemingly crazy point of view.
Mm. Yeah, it could be because if you like, I don't fault people. Most of us believed in viruses, and I didn't figure this whole scheme out myself. It was only because I came across a presentation by Dr. Andrew Kaufman, and I had heard earlier too, a bit through David Crow, that the alleged virus hadn't even been isolated. So it's not that I'm faulting them for it. Sorry, I just lost my train of thought, what I was about to say.
Mm-hmm. I think they're afraid of the public relations impact of asking the question.
Yeah, and so I guess all these years they've been doing great work exposing issues with the injections that were called the vaccines. I won't call them vaccines anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure along the way they probably relied on a lot of different virologists for input. And, you know, they, like most everybody else, they took the existence of these alleged viruses at face value without even thinking to question them, right? Mm-hmm. So now they've built up this huge body of work based on the idea that viruses do exist. So, I mean, I know it must be, it takes all this investment into, you know, the idea that viruses do exist, and now you need to turn it around. But, I mean, if you're devoted to getting to the truth and to really protecting people, you know, because at the end of the day, that's what this is supposed to be about, is about protecting children and, you know, protecting the greater community. So, it might cause offense to people, but unfortunately, everybody will be better off once they just, you know, take a look at the reality of the situation, you know. But yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people and a lot of companies and probably a lot of powerful people that could be very upset.
Well, I think you're on point, particularly when you say that it is a ground shifting conversation. To even acknowledge this, to acknowledge the question, shifts the ground on which all of Western medicine is built. But there's something else going on here, which is that the claim of the virus was used within essentially 8 weeks of its announcement to order the entire world under house arrest. And yeah. And within 8 weeks of the claim of a virus, they were ordering people under house arrest, and 3 weeks later had 4.5 billion people ordered to stay home.
Yeah.
So we're talking about something so huge and unprecedented. You would never in your entire life have imagined even 4, 5, 6 years ago they could order the world to be locked into their homes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there's a lot going on here, and this is really, I mean, this is kind of the Copernican revolution. This is like putting the sun in the middle of the solar system and the galactic core at the middle of the galaxy and not imagining everything in the entire universe revolves around this concept of a virus, mm-hmm. which it all of medicine does, and now seemingly all of law does. They suspended courts and trials, and government offices were locked down, and you mm-hmm. know, everything shut down on this one claim.
Yes. And it, since you mentioned the courts, I'll just mention, like in Canada, there was an attempt to challenge the existence of the alleged virus. So what happened in this case, it was a federal case, and the gentleman who was challenging the government on mandates, and they asked me for an affidavit. So I gave one about the Freedom of Information responses, and Dr. Daniel Nagasi gave an affidavit about the PCR tests. And he even said in his final point that it could be the reason they don't have a proper test is because the virus only exists as a computer file. So the judge, instead of doing a review of the actual evidence for or against, he did something I don't think I'd ever heard of this before, but he accepted an invitation from the Attorney General to take judicial notice, is what they call it. So, and now I understand it's a mechanism, it's supposed to be intended for things that are so obvious that, you know, there's no need to, you know, review evidence to see if, you know, is grass green or what have you, something very obvious. That's what it's supposed to be intended for. So he applied that, apparently at the invitation of the Attorney General, to this alleged virus. And so, and they say that once judicial notice has been taken of something, that it can't even be challenged after that. I don't know if that's technically true. I mean, either way, it's just showing how corrupt the courts are, and how even when people try to address this in court, you know, it doesn't even necessarily mean there will be a review of the evidence. Mm-hmm. Just in case anybody was wondering, you know, if there have been attempts or if they've heard that in Canada it was determined that the virus does exist, I would just like people to know that it actually wasn't based on any evidence. And something similar happened in South Africa, where some people tried to get the South African government to have to prove the existence of the virus in court, and the judge just said it wasn't an urgent matter, and she basically brushed the matter aside.
Right.
So this is the thing that needs to be addressed.
Well, this is, I mean, we're talking about something that is almost a metaphysical question. Mm-hmm. When you consider the extent to which the presumption of the existence of viruses has been drilled into everyone's head since, you know, they were drilling it in with a drill. They're injecting 24-hour babies right now with hepatitis B vaccines. Mm-hmm. So they're literally drilling it into the human body within moments of birth.
Yes.
And so believing in it is not really considered optional. It's not even... It's almost like challenging the law of gravity, except for one thing. I've probably watched 200 physics lectures. They can't tell you how gravity works. I mean, Einstein has a theory, but there's no quantum theory of gravity. And when you compare Einstein's theory of gravity to Newton's theory of gravity, that sounds like two really different things. And so what we end up getting here is a question about the foundations of science itself. So it's when you question the existence of viruses, it's almost like going into church and questioning the existence of God. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to really question that so good in church. You have to go outside of church to question the existence of God. And they could be droning on about sin and all that in church, and you could be out back making out with a cute girl behind the church, and it's like, I don't need that stuff. I'm having fun back here.
Well, and I mean, and this is supposed to be science, right? Like, here's the thing: it's not even difficult to verify. Like, anybody can just read these papers and. It's not like we're talking about the existence of God. We're talking about something like Dr. Kawanoy says, it's supposed to be an actual physical thing, right? So you should be able to find it and go from there. But, you know, so it's not a difficult issue to tackle.
No, it's settled. No. What I said to Mary Holland is there is no controversy here. When you look at these papers, when you... Just forget about all viruses. If you look at SARS-CoV-2, they do not meet any qualification for existing.
Right.
It exists no more than the Death Star in Star Wars.
They just declare it. It's funny reading their papers because they'll say viral RNA. Someone sent me an email the other day saying viral pathogenicity or something, you know, and they just attribute things to the virus verbally. They just write it. And it's funny because even in the beginning when you're reading these papers, it does something to your mind. Like, it scrambles your mind because they just keep saying it and saying it and saying it throughout the paper.
Yeah.
And yet when you have to, like, push that aside and say, wait, what have they actually shown? And when you actually look at what they did, just what did they do and what did they find, it comes down to nothing. But yeah. It is really strange, and I've challenging. There's some famous people on a certain email list that I somehow got added to, and I've been challenging them. And even these, you know, these are like well-established scientists, and they can't argue with me. They can't. They just can't. They'll send me papers, and they're just ridiculous. And they're so easy for me to point out how ridiculous they are, and then they have nothing else to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I'm saying this is a spiritual issue. It's about the nature of consciousness and the nature of what we accept as true. It's calling out something much larger, and I think that the sense of scale of the much larger was that it's every human being in the known universe that's on Earth. Was ordered into their homes. I mean, there were probably a couple of places where in rural India and Arkansas, but they had, you know, the Times reports 4.5 billion people under stay-at-home order by the end of March of 2020. So this is so large that it's inconceivable, and most of your scientists and academics are so indoctrinated by the system that they're in, that they don't dare question it any more than a priest would get up on Sunday morning and say to the what remains of their congregation, God, shall we talk about the existence of God? Like, that's not in the lexicon or the kind of ken of a Roman Catholic or any priest to have a sermon about that. And so this is why I'm saying it's almost a religious issue, in that what we're exposing in these conversations is that it's all based on a form of faith, and this faith is being used. You know, we're beyond witch burnings here.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad enough when they picked out certain heretics. Everyone essentially was declared a heretic. In March of 2020, the entire planet was declared a heretic of a certain kind. So this is so large. It is, I think, larger than even we're seeing how many minds can't do this. I mean, I had an exchange with Jeffrey Tucker this morning, as I mentioned, the head of the Brownstone Institute, and he came right back at me and said, I'm not an expert on this. And you don't need to be an expert on this. You don't. It's not about expertise.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's actually very simple. And this is what I keep trying to get through to people. It's not rocket science. You know, and like I think I've heard Dr. Kaufman or Dr. Andrew Kaufman or Dr. Thomas Cowan say, you know, if we can't get this right when it's something so simple, like how are we going to get more complicated things cleared up? But, you know, we've been so conditioned for decades through television and movies largely and in the schools to trust experts, to just listen to the experts, you know, and I see that as a huge part of it. People just, and if you try to tell people something that goes against what the experts are saying, they say, well, who do you think you are, you know, what are your qualifications? But this is really, really a simple, simple issue. Like that's, anybody can understand it. Anybody can look at the papers. It can be intimidating at first. It helps to, if you don't have the background knowledge, to find out what some of the keywords mean and what to look for. But do you have that knowledge? And there's people out there that have done such a brilliant job of explaining it, like Dr. Kaufman and Callan and the Baileys, Sam and Mark Bailey, and many people at this point. There's a lot of lay people out there now that can explain it really, really well. So if someone just gets that knowledge and they can easily look at the papers and then, you know, the freedom of information responses too saves you the trouble of even having to read the papers. So it should be common sense that if you don't have a pure sample of something, they can't have done any science on it. They can't have analyzed something that they don't even have a pure sample of.
Right, but what people have in their minds is, well, that can't be, right? So when, you know, when you have the discussions enough, the final argument against this position, right, that show us the virus is, no, it can't be that they don't have any. They must have some.
Right.
They must have some.
And then it doesn't help when you have someone like Dr. Michael Yeadon makes a comment like, he acknowledged it in one interview last year, but then he said, oh, but, you know, he's sure someone has a bucket full of it somewhere. But, you know, that's not good enough, like, you know, to just speculate. We need proof, right? That, like you said, if the governments are going to lock people down, I mean, you can debate whether they have the right to do that, even if there was a virus, but, you know, they should be put on the spot to prove what they're claiming. So
well, there's been a lot of viruses. I've probably said this to you. As far as I know, the most controversial article about this all that I wrote was about the Woodstock 1969 festival, which was held during the claimed Hong Kong flu of 68 and 69, which by the time of the Woodstock festival had already been said to have killed 100,000 people.
I didn't even know that.
And it's called They Were Barefoot in Babylon. How do we get here? Part two. They Were Barefoot in Babylon. And this article caused so much consternation. And it was so the circulating drafts were getting people so riled up that I had to put a disclaimer in the article saying that I'm not expecting a bunch of hippies in 1969 to lead to your bad behavior in 2020. I'm just telling you what happened in 1969. And what happened in 1969 was, we are told, 400,000 people got together in the pouring down rain in a farmer's field made of cow shit and grass in the middle of this claimed pandemic that had supposedly killed, you know, whatever, the population of Providence, Rhode Island or something, probably Providence a little bigger. And no one cared, and no one got sick, and nothing happened, and no one knew about it. I contacted because I knew them well enough to, because I live near Woodstock, New York, where they kind of gravitate to. I contacted the historian, Bob Spitz, who wrote the book Barefoot in Babylon, from whom I stole the title. I contacted Michael Lang, who sadly passed away earlier this year, who I'd corresponded with many times and met many times right on my own street. And he said, nope, nothing. Bob Spitz said, what do you mean? What are you talking about? That's what he said. He was sniping at me. What are you talking about? No, and what the hell are you talking about? And then Elliot Landy, the funniest part of all, like, because I knew him the best of all, fan of my astrology column, and I said, were you, he was the photographer. He's the official event photographer. I know photographers. They're situationally aware people. That's their whole game, is to be situationally aware, because the photo might be behind you, right? So, nope, I want you to know, neither me nor my wife, who was with me at the time, had any concerns whatsoever about Hong Kong flu.
Wow.
But, so, this was, so, one of the other founders, somebody finally sent me a quote, I think Joel Rosenman or someone said, yeah, we were a little worried, but didn't stop them, and everyone was piled onto each other. Strangers having sex, passing joints, sharing sandwiches, sharing Cokes, and nothing happened. And then you look at 2020, and you look at all the parks, and everyone's sitting in a chalk circle in the park, 10 feet away from the next person. This is not a health issue going on.
And sadly, with like very little resistance to all this tyranny.
Well, we've been transformed.
Yeah,
you're familiar with my digital theory of all of this. Have I ever?
I've heard you talk about it somewhat. Yeah.
So, while we're here, what I wrote it in a Facebook post. I'm going to spin it into an article that someone kindly retrieved for me. The presence of the internet made it possible to create and scale quote COVID and quote the virus. Without digital technology, there never would have been quote, COVID. I'm not going to say quote every time it gets burdensome.
Yeah,
first, digital technology provides the necessary disconnection from the body to blur the distinction between sick and well. Digital transformed us long before the new content of the alleged virus. Out of body, this is a little bit long, so hope you're liking story time. First, digital provides the necessary, this is, I think, the central issue, disconnection from the body to blur the distinction between sick and well. Out-of-body robotic thinking provided the ground, the, like, ground of existence, and the bald insensitivity, the lack of humanity, to separate people from one another, isolate them, abandon infirm and elderly relatives, cast off children and parents from holiday celebrations, all due to a contrived, using CDC's term, contrived virus that was spreading via digital code and being detected, in quotes, by a digital device. The term viral is one of the most used and abused words of the 20th century, 21st century, pertaining to popularity. The term digital is a term viral is a term of the digital age exclusively in this context. The first recorded use was in 1999. That's according to Douglas Harper, who tracks the existence and use of words. Digital technology provided the means to create in silico contrived digital sequences and then claim to test for them, initiating a new alternative form of being diagnosed when a person is perfectly healthy. Digital provided the means to distribute phony PCR codes based on those sequences worldwide in a matter of hours, rapidly creating the illusion of simultaneous outbreaks in every country that no one would have noticed otherwise because they weren't happening. Digital provided the proliferation of the PCR device in every public health and medical institution. The proliferation of fake positives provided a rationale to poison people with remdesivir and other things, which causes kidney failure and pulmonary edema, which creates the appearance of pneumonia. Digital technology provided the means and the incentive to test, track, and trace people by way of their personal phones. This is a crucial motive behind the whole COVID trip. Digital technology provided the apparatus to pump the paranoia and warnings around the clock for 2 years in people already weakened and transformed by robotic binary thinking. Mm. the nonstop conflicting reports, all in digital format, enhanced the disassembly of reasoning, true doublethink. Digital allowed for the ongoing easy censoring of viewpoints that threatened the narrative. Digital provides the means for Moderna to claim that mRNA, its mRNA platform, is like an app or an operating system, that being a fantastic thing injected into people because they now believe that they too are digital devices subject to upgrades. And inferior, that humans are inferior to digital devices. Finally, at this late date, it seems inevitable that one of the factors making some people sick was the powering up of 5G technology in Wuhan and New York City in late 2019. Increasing EMF signals have long been associated for more than 100 years with disease response in the population. Without digital, there would have been no COVID. COVID is digital.
Hmm. Bingo. I think you nailed it there, Eric.
This is the difference between Woodstock and and today. It's why Elliot Landy wouldn't come to me to the Woodstock Festival site to photograph it, the photographer. Like, Elliot, me and Landy are going over to the festival site. It's a thing you do up here.
Mm-hmm.
Festival site's an hour in that direction. Woodstock's 20 minutes in that direction. So he's like... So, Elliot, let's go. Get your wife. Let's go. No, I'm not leaving the house. I'm not leaving the house.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And, yeah, it seems like they want to, well, they, you know, there are people who want to lead us to an existence that is controlled very much electronically. And, yeah, I think you nailed it 100% right there. And it'll just escalate and escalate until... You know, unless we can break people out of this spell, which is what we're trying to do with our work. So, yeah, it has to be interrupted. And you just want to shake people, you know, and snap them back into reality.
Listen, we haven't done a bad job, really. I think, actually, in the scheme of things, we've done a very good job. Your work is, I consider it to be, of, like, the three most important things that have... gotten in the way of this, you are right up there, possibly number one. This type of thing is something I've been tracking for a long time, including toxins issues, but also the way that false flags are used. And I can tell you with a pretty high degree of confidence, in my view, in my experience, they're not going to be able to pull another virus false flag. We've
really
weakened that issue to the point now where it's just not going to work a second time.
Good. Okay. Because they're definitely planning. They want to keep it going as long as possible.
Right.
One pandemic after another.
Yeah. But come on. So it's going to have to be something else. And that's where we have to be paying attention. Is it going to be a financial crash? Is it going to be, as Wernher von Braun warned, an alien invasion?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they ramped up the alien invasion stuff in 2020. Did you notice in April, late April of 2020, that they trotted out the videos of alien spaceships?
I remember in the last, I don't know if it was 2020, I remembered in recent years, like just the last few years, people talking more and more about disclosure along those lines, so...
Well,
yeah.
It became national, international news around April. It's in the chronology. Around April 29th, we're on the anniversary, of they're claiming that they had footage, and they released the footage of Air Force pilots chasing these things and saying, what the hell is that? And we here tracking COVID news, looking at each other like, what the hell is this? In the middle of this shit show, they're putting out stuff about an alien invasion. And it was around the proverbial imaginary in silico water cooler at Planet Wave, since we mostly work remotely. We were saying, where does this all end? Alien invasion.
Yeah, so that was the government doing that was supposedly putting out?
Yeah, the Air Force released it, and the New York Times went along with it, and media put it out. It was on TV. I'm like, wow. And then I think a much more credible movie came out. I think it's on Amazon, called The Phenomenon, with much better documentation. I thought that was a solid documentary. It may be unrelated. I can't imagine it was delayed to come out at some point in 2020. But that has two U.S. presidents commenting, Clinton and Ford, commenting. Ford, when he was a congressman, after the Warren Commission and prior to becoming vice president, saying, "You can't tell me this was swamp gas. 100 of my constituents saw this thing." This kind of quote. Astronauts, pilots, and the most impressive of all was the Zimbabwe schoolyard incident, where like 50 kids were out playing out in the bush for their 10 o'clock break. The ship comes down and lands, and the beings are telepathing with them about protecting the environment. The kids come back to school. The teachers tell them they're full of shit. The news media picks up on it. And all of their stories were consistent and airtight. And then they made a reunion of them 25 years later and interview them again. And they had the same people, and they all said the same thing 25 years later. This comes out in 2020. So I think we beat them down on, I think we have developed immunity to the virus claim at this point, I think.
I know a lot of people have. I hope it's enough, you know, to, I don't have a pulse, I think, on the general public the way that you do. So I hope. I know people are tired of it. They're tired of COVID for sure.
Yes, that's important.
Yeah,
that's important. But I mean, imagine 9/11 happening, right? Where they, you know, the planes hit the World Trade Center, two planes knocked down three buildings. In the words of the inimitable James Corbett, in his most humorous summary of 9/11, if you know, two planes knocked down three buildings, and then imagine that like a week later they knock down the Empire State Building, and then they fly a thing into the Sears Tower, and then they fly a thing into that thing, and then you think, What isn't anybody like checking, you know, who's flying these air, like what? So they can't do the knock down a building with controlled demolition one again. They did that.
Yeah, too many people caught on to that.
And then they had to do, then the next one was weapons of mass destruction, which were at the time being called weapons of mass deception.
Mm-hmm.
So they morph, you know, like they claim these magical viruses morph. They morph.
Yeah.
Well, here we are in at this late date, at this late hour, you know, two years and two months into my work on this. I can't believe I get up every morning and still work on this.
Yeah. Your chronology is so valuable. I should share that more often actually with people. It's such a great resource that you've put together. Because for people like me especially, everything just kind of, I've never been good at keeping track of time and my memory to try to think back of what the order that things happened in and what exactly went on. I mean, and there's always so much more news coming at us that, you know, you can't keep track. So the fact that you have put that chronology together is really, really special.
Well, we started really by keeping track. That was the first thing. That was the first order from the bridges. We're going to keep track of this every single day on March 3rd, 2020, and we're going to work our way backward in time. So those two things happened here, right in this very room I'm standing in, on March 3rd, 2020. So I've had enough experience covering these complicated, sprawling scandals to know that you got to pounce on the chronology. Now, I didn't a lot. We missed a lot of stuff in that, and I'm remembering stuff that that just like, oh, like for example, the price of oil going to -$35. I don't have that in. I have my list of fantasy things I'm going to include. Hold on here, looking for my drafts folder. So my current ads are: we don't have Tom Cowan's first viral video. We're going to add some samples of controversies like Max Public House in Staten Island, where a business went to war with the government. We can't obviously have them all, but we can have some spot checks. Unemployment data in the United States, weekly and monthly unemployment data, PCR positives collected by month. I'm digging into the PCR wars of the 1990s to get a sense of that prehistory that Celia covered. The federal court ruling in Pennsylvania, the Constitution cannot withstand a permanent state of emergency, and similar rulings. Again, we have to spot check that, though it would be good to have someone construct a purely legal chronology. I don't have that person to do that yet.
Wow, that's incredible.
And that's 2020. So now when we get into 2021, we're really into the vaccine scenario. It's a whole other thing. There's COVID stuff going on. I think it's still going to be interesting into like January and February. But at that point, we're now into the VAERS data. We're now into who's dying from the injection. And fortunately, Open VAERS has been good. I mean, I wonder if they've got the spreadsheet, but all through 20, you know, the spreadsheet of like how many were added each month. But in 21, it's the story of, again, the narrative unraveling. The whole like second half of 2020 is the narrative unraveling. You can see that, and you can see the efforts to pump it up, and they order everyone back into masks in November, and they try to lock down again in November because they're like, come on, guys, we've got this vaccine rollout. It's not coming till December. Can you keep them scared for one more month?
Right. Yeah.
And then it's the unraveling happens again all through 2021. The problem with the chronology is crucial in that it's stunning to see what order things happen in. And I just got from the Baileys the chronology of important paper publications. I'm going to add that in, like as soon as I'm done with the program. It's like I've got Mets tickets. I'm just jonesing to open up that file and get those documents in. This. In a way, it all has a little bit of, and I'll end on this very pleasant note. I was in Milwaukee when they were digging up Jeff Dahmer's house.
Oh, okay.
I was at a student conference. And in the paper, back when there were newspapers, one day they had, it was like point size 25 million, arm bone found. Okay, this was so big you could like read it from an airplane, but it turns out the next day it actually wasn't an arm bone, and on page 2 in a correction the size of a postage stamp, they said, "Oh, it was a chicken bone, furry chicken bone, it was chicken, like a Kentucky Fried Chicken." There's a little bit of this. Chicken bone found. It's not make the news. No matter what. So, sadly, we're in the chicken bone found phase of COVID. chicken bone found. Oh, my God. Christine Massey, I want to tell you, I adore you. I think of you beatifically every day.
Oh, you're so sweet, Eric. I adore you. You're amazing. The more I get to know you and more familiar I am with your work, the more amazed I am, actually.
All right. Well, I'm doing my little thing. I introduced you to Carol Van Strum, who really got me started on document collecting. I'm not just a connoisseur of documents, but of collectors. I'm telling you, and I think she would agree that that you're in league with Carol.
You know, I just have to say, like, if people actually knew, like, I'm so sick to death of this stuff, and I'm not even interested in this kind of thing. Like,
yeah, I mean, I know.
If the world hadn't been turned upside down, I never would have. Like, I just don't like injustice, right? So that's why I was involved in the water fluoridation, and I was kind of looking at vaccines, but I thought, well, I got to finish water fluoridation first, and then maybe I'll pay more attention to that. But I'm not even interested. Like, it's kind of funny. I think it's a reflection of just how ludicrous this whole thing is and how shaky the science. I was working as a cashier when this got started. Like, it's just a cashier that's collected these documents. Like, anybody could have done it. It's just that I happen to know about doing freedom of information, and I happened to come across Andrew Kaufman's work, you know, and I could apply a little logic and see, like, hey, you know, this is correct. That's all I did, you know. And then maybe unique thing about me was that I was so persistent with it. But other than that, I'm not anybody special, even the tiniest little bit. So
right. I mean,
it just shows you how shaky this whole thing is.
Yes. And it's, you know, Tolkien was right. It's always the small, you know, when the great fail, the small persist.
Yeah.
You know, the New York Times is the place that should be doing this. I'm not done with them in terms of calling them out on their fraud. I have a history of doing that.
Good for you.
And also being treated fairly well by the New York Times while I'm calling them out on their journalistic fraud. But this was a failure on so many levels. Look, you rose to the occasion. I think for anyone listening, you're an inspiration to those who see an angle or can in any way stand up against these petty tyrants to do it.
Well, yeah, like if I can do it, anybody can do it. So hopefully it does inspire people to, you know, when they see something wrong, not to think that there's nothing they can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So. And of course, you know, we once again enter spiritual territory here, the territory of Dharma.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, again, thank you. And what a lot of fleeting matters we have spurned, and some very enduring matters. And I will be in touch. And thank you for coming on the program again.
Much, Eric. Take care and God bless.
Love. Bye for now.